It's time now for Sunday Fireside, a weekly feature of this radio station, as we present inspirational talks and discussions on religious topics from popular LDS speakers and general authorities. On today's Sunday Fireside, we present two talks, the first from Brother Robert Pedersen, a talk entitled Success is a Personal Thing. And in our second half hour, we'll feature an LDS General Conference address from Elder Earl C. Tingey, a talk on keeping the Sabbath day holy. Again, this talk coming up later in our program. But first, our speaker is Brother Robert Pedersen. He has spent most of his professional life successfully building sales and financial organizations. The title of his talk is Success is a Personal Thing. This talk was given at the Ephraim LDS Institute of Religion back on March 26, 1982. And now, Brother Robert Pedersen on Sunday Fireside.
We made the good choice of coming by way of the Thistle Junction on Route 89, which gave us an opportunity of enjoying leisurely beauty and the mountains. And when we arrived here, I knew that this had to be one of the choice places that God has preserved on the earth, when you could look at the front page of the paper and the most significant and powerful thing that you could read in terms of all the uglies that you read in the rest of the world. It said, the librarian retires after 14 and a half years. And I thought, how tremendous that you can have a place in this world today where there can be the kind of peace to where the tragedies and the grubs and the awfuls of the world get relegated to where it should be, and that is, in my judgment, the back pages. So often today, so often, that all of our time on television and all of our time in newspapers and the periodicals are spent highlighting the negative, the uglies, the failures. I spoke the other day up to the University of Utah to the student body up there, and I was sharing with the insight that I had from being a dad, the insight from being perhaps a sales leader that's seen people who cared not one whit about themselves, and then they got on excited and on fire and began to grow. I shared with them the question of who are your heroes. And then I tied it into the concept that I'd like to share with you today, and that is success is a very personal thing. Success is a very personal matter. And just by parenthetically, I want you to know that I was moved by some of the comments of some high school students with the passing of John Belushi. John Belushi, in terms of the world, I remember reading in People's Magazine about 5 months ago where he was making upwards of $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a day on his royalties and whatever. That he had girlfriends and he had three homes and he had a talent and a gift. And he basically told the teachers in high school in his first year of college to go take a flying leap, that he kind of was his own man. And he was kind of the star's friend, the star's idol. And yet, after all of that, I read that he didn't really have the millions, that there's a question of whether he left as much as even a half a million, which in today's language, after you've gone through millions of dollars, it's all that's left. And he left it all. He left all of it here. You see, when John left, he only left with himself and what he had chosen to be through his choices. I thought it was interesting that John left in the morning after he had spent the night with a questionable girlfriend. We're not sure, but we are, whether it was a hooker, a prostitute, or just a sleep around. His wife didn't comment on it because she was back in New York. John had a bad case of emphysema from smoking 4 or 5, 6 packs a day. His liver had problems because of being an excessive drinker. And he died choking on his tongue from an overdose of heroin. And whose hero might he have been to those TV-watching young folks throughout the world? And then I compare that to the experience that we had this morning of going to the Salt Lake Airport at 7 o'clock and visiting a girl who came to our home 6 months after she had been converted to the church. I'll change her name because you'll never meet her or know her, but the story is powerful because I know it intimately. Raised in Canada by a beautiful set of parents that didn't know much about living successfully, but they tried. The gospel meant nothing. They knew nothing about church or religion. But Elizabeth decided that she was her own person, and she made some choices. She chose to be a little promiscuous sexually. But that's a choice anyone can make. You can make it certainly at your age and the vitality and the fire that burns inside of you. But you know something? I can make the same choice. I travel constantly throughout the world, many times with Catherine and my children, many times with my business partner. But I oftentimes will be in a hotel on the 10th floor looking out at a red light district that's a block or two away and seeing girls in the lounges and whatever, and I just simply make a choice that it's sick. Because as the prophets have told us, we must make the choice as we live in the world to choose to be in the world. We chose to be here. And we're here for an exciting and powerful purpose. But while we are here, we don't have to choose to be of the world. That side by side, you can watch people who are making sick choices, and you're making dynamic choices. I remember Bruce R. McConkie, one of the great heroes of my life, speaking at a welfare session about a year and a half ago, and Brother McConkie talked about the concept that things will not get better. There will be no peace. There will not come a time in your lifetime or my lifetime where there's going to be peace on the earth. There's going to be El Salvador's and Nicaragua's and Cuba's and West Bank's and Syria's and the Middle East. Why, that's just part of the world. But we can be in the world but not of the world. And then he said, but Latter-day Saints have the choice, of choosing to build Zions and oases of beauty and power and peace because we choose to do so amidst all the garbage that's going on. I want to talk to you today, if I may, about the concept then of choice. Some elders happened to knock on Elizabeth's door, and her parents and other brothers and sisters had no interest in it. They were failing. They were dropping out of school. They were struggling. She then left and ran away, had the typical arguments with parents. Parents tell you to do these things, even though they aren't those things, and that's tough. When parents tell you to be good and they're not good. When they tell you to be obedient and they're not really obedient. When they tell you to be aggressive in terms of excellence and they're lazy, and that's tough sometimes when you have that kind of contradiction going on. And so she ran away. She worked in a gas station and this and that, and finally she took a challenge where a young man said to her, Tina, almost blew it. I'm not going to tell you who what her real name is. So she says, Tina, if you will read the Book of Mormon and pray over your readings, your life will be changed. And it was kind of like, says who? Well, you have these great brethren here, and they are great and mighty leaders to spend their time and energies in testifying and teaching you what they already know. And I, at this point, would put a comma in and say to you, as my little band gets up warily in the morning and comes up around our little table and begins to read the Book of Mormon 15, 20 minutes a morning, I want you to know that many mornings I don't feel like reading. It's not the kind of thing maybe you'd read in a handbook. How wonderful to wake up all your children at 6 o'clock in the morning and have them wake up and say, "Oh, good morning, Father. Is it time to read the Book of Mormon?" I have a 15-year-old boy that looks like he's going through a trial resurrection. He is struggling to get up. "Are you coming, Robert?" And, "Yeah, I'm coming, Dad." And then we say, "Oh, it's so good to see you, kids." And inside I'm saying to myself, "I wonder if they're as tired as I am." But I heard a rule. The rule was that if you read regularly from the Scriptures and pray over the Scriptures, that your kids really won't go astray. And so we read and we go through, and we're just up now finishing and moving into the second chapter of Mormon. We're going to make it. We're going to make it. We're going to make the conclusion of a neat experience through the Book of Mormon before school is out. It's neat. Well, she did. And something happened inside of her where she started to believe that Jacob was a real man. And Enos prayed and taught how to pray, and Mosiah, and on and through. And she began to choose. She chose to join, then she chose to go out to church, and she heard about Salt Lake, and we were a family that likes to have young girls from time to time come to our home because we think that maybe we can help, and maybe they can help us with 8 kids. She came, and her testimony grew. And can you imagine the feeling we had when she accepted a call to go to Geneva, Switzerland on a mission? And when I, as kind of a foster friend dad, she calls me dad and puts quotes around it. I'm not her father, but I'm her dad in quotes. And I took her down to the LTM, and as we sat there in the Missionary Training Center, the MTC, I guess they call it today, and I heard them bearing testimony, and I saw this army of magnificent brothers and sisters, many of them scared, many of them still seeking for their own testimony, and yet they were given the challenge now to go out and testify what they were still seeking to obtain. And in that process, a feeling came over me again. Will you for just a moment understand the concept that success is a personal thing? Will you put little cubicles around each of you in this room for the next few minutes that we're together? And I'm going to turn on my jets, and we will travel over a lot of material for a few minutes just to stir your hearts. But here is the concept. If you right now, today, in this meeting, decide you want to change a little bit in your life, you really can. If you decide that it's up to you, and it's not up to these brethren or your parents or the teachers, and the Lord cannot do it, your Father in heaven cannot touch you unless you decide to be touched. That if you have backgrounds of parents that are active or inactive, makes no difference. Divorced relations in your homes, makes no difference. Drinking or smoking or problems in your home, makes no difference. I don't care what kind of a life you have had in the past, it makes no difference. If ever in your conversation with your brothers and sisters or your roommates or your friends, you go into a dialogue where you are trying to transfer who you are and where you're going on the responsible shoulders of other people, that is a cop-out. There are giants that come in the young people leagues from families that are disasters, and there are disasters that come from families that have giants. Choice is yours. We have friends and people that we love who are tremendous, and they are aching for a son or a daughter who chose for their teenage years to blow it, that being a goof-off and a clown or a smoker or a drinker or a carouser or making out or going all the way seemed somehow an exercise of their choice. And they just ate up precious years in their life. And yet I have seen those same kinds of young people who finally on a given day, today, here, tonight on your knees, this weekend, a visit with your bishop, a visit with these priesthood leaders, you finally say, hey, the time has come for me to take charge of me. If maybe I had no other choice than to come here because maybe of my grades, and so Snow would accept me. But I say to you, if you want to go on and get a 4-year degree and go to Utah State, go. If you want to go to BYU, go. That choice is yours. The biggest sin, mentally and attitudinally, that I find among everyone that I know, including myself and my wife, is when we allow ourselves to somehow accept that the way we are is the way we always have to be. That the way you've been, the style, the approach, your sense or lack of spirituality, your righteousness or unrighteousness, the day that you choose to take success as a personal thing and a personal matter, and you repent, meaning turn away from that which is taking you nowhere and begin to follow and accept that which will take you somewhere, your Father in heaven has said He will remember it no more. The hardest part for some people who have been associated with mediocrity their whole life is that when one of their friends betrays them and starts to succeed, you understand what I'm saying? That you get a group of kids going together and they kind of all hang on each other, and this one starts to succeed and they pull me back down. They all kind of work together like a pack. Careful, don't be too good. What do you mean you got a B in that class? None of us got B's in that class. What do you mean you're studying tonight? We're going out and goofing off. And finally, somebody kind of says, away, non-friends. I am going to take charge of me, because for the rest of my life, I am not going to be playing ring around the handhold with you four or five or these three or four roommates, because I suddenly have decided that I don't have to be the way I am anymore. I can be different. Quick story. And then a couple of key points to remember, and we'll get you back on the front lines again. My dear bride and I were together in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, being 6'5", I am an oddity. As I walk down the street, the beautiful Chinese people walk by, and they go, oh, yo, very nice, big tall guy. You know, when I meet him, I said, how are you? Sure nice to see you. Took an elevator in, went up. I was supposed to be the speaker in a service, a sacrament service, as a part of a general board assignment. And I was meeting all the cute people, you know, and I don't realize it, but I'm kind of talking in this way. And I love them. I spent months and months in the Orient in business. And I love the people. And finally, I walked up to a hand, and it was connected to a boy who was Chinese, and he was 6'4". And he looked me right in the eye. And he walked up and he says, Brother Pearson, could I talk to you privately? Catherine's so smart. She's a super wife. She said, honey, why don't you two brethren talk? And I'll just go sit up on the stand. He said, Brother Pearson, my name is Brother Yong. Could I talk to you? I said, sure. And then he poured his heart out, abbreviated. He said, in Hong Kong, I am a freak because I am so tall. Many make fun of me all my life, but I see you tall. Do you have problem in Utah? I says, my only problem, I need to be about 4 inches taller and I could have played all the time. And I says, no. And he talked about the problems, and I could see him. And so I thought, there's that sickness again, being down on yourself instead of up on yourself, of assuming that because of what other people have told you, who are losers anyhow, That you have ears for the losers and you won't listen to the voice of the prophets or the voice of the scriptures, where the prophets call out to you and say, when you decide to change, you can change. I was going to give it to him, so I said, let me tell you something. Promise you won't say anything? He says, just between you and I, Brother Young. I says, tall is where it's at. I says, the little guys don't have a chance. I says, over here in Hong Kong with your height, well, you can get rice off the shelf. You can change bulbs. Well, you could even clean off the top of your house. I says, when you go down to the parades in Hong Kong, you can stand like I do on the 24th of July. I just stand there and I watch the parades go by, where all the little folks are down there among the popcorn and ice cream trying to see what's going on. Well, I could see his time was short, so I looked at him and I said, let me tell you something. There is, and I took him by the lapel, I got close to him, heart to heart, and I said, there is no disadvantage of any kind whatsoever being tall, brother. And he got a little tear and he says, oh, thank you, Bobby, yes, son. I said, it's okay. It's all right. We'll do it. Put more around him. Walked up on the stand. We sat down. He kept looking at me going. Well, as fate would have it, he became the prayer and he walked up. And he began to pray, and I thought, oh, no, is he going to say, and thank Lord for all the tall folks, of which I'm one of them, or something, and he didn't. But leaning up between Catherine and I was President Ng, N-G, who was the interpreter. And he said, this boy has mighty change. He feel great spirit, and he was interpreting. Finally, he sat down. Came time for me to talk. I walked up. Stood there. Here came President Yong, NG, and he stood up there, and I said, I want you to know how much I appreciate this good man. I didn't realize it. As I put my arm around him, his head was right here. And tall again, the problem. We laughed a little bit. And then I began to talk, and I said, there's great advantages, and I gave some examples, and finally I said, there are three great advantages of being a member of the church here in Hong Kong. And I said, the first great advantage is, and with that, I stuck my finger in the middle of a rotating fan. Oh, came down. Oh, hurt. President Ng whipped out his handkerchief, wrapped, you know, oh, no, it's okay. You know, a big nick there and a little... all the brothers and sisters out there. See the headline. General board member loses finger in Hong Kong. Well, just at that moment, Brother Yong, the boy, the 6'5" boy who I had talked to and given my pep talk to, he turned to Catherine and whispered, I kid you not, clearly, actually, in her ear and said, that, Sister Peterson, is one disadvantage. All right, now with your best listening ears, the message that you're about to hear and the message I've given you so far is simply this. You are responsible for you. To cop out by saying you are what you are as a result of anything that's occurred is strictly an abdication of the responsibility you have to recognize that you are on this earth to prove yourself and to your Father in heaven, who already knows how you'll turn out, but has given the eternal opportunity of you proving it to yourself. And that's why when you receive your special blessings and when priesthood leaders say to you, Do you know how great you really are that some of you think it's those fancy words that don't have the meaning that I would like to convey to you? Now, knowing what I'm going to say, I want to say this to you. With much history, there is absolutely no disadvantage of the next two key concepts that I want to share with you today. None. There's no disadvantage. You'll never find a disadvantage. They are true principles, and here's what they are. First, you must recognize that the choice for your success is yours. That how you are when you're 25 and 27 and 30 and 35 and the relationship between husband and wife, whether or not you have divorces and problems as a result of your input and all the heartache that you read about on the front pages of the normal newspapers and see on the crummy soap operas in the afternoons and everything else. All of the garbage of the world has occurred because people chose to do so. John Belushi chose to be, in the words of one of his associates, a professional bum. Okay? Now, who is the hero of Heaven Can Wait? Warren Beatty. Beatty? He's Beatty. I'll mention that. Let me say in passing, it's a thought running parallel. I wish that we had the time to just talk about heroes, because so often you choose heroes that are not heroes. Warren Beatty, as he was described, or Beatty one night by his sister, she said, he is the classic, all-encompassing, total failure. Because he has chosen to become the scourge of 300 or 400 or 500 or 600 women. He's a drinker and a carouser. He is an adulterer in the total sense of the word. And she then, in the nightclub act, says, if he continues the way he's going, I hope, her words, not mine, he receives the reward that he's been giving to others, and that is a life of sheer hell and agony by choice. The choice is yours. If you're taking notes or two, let me give you some choices. You have to choose whether or not you're going to pray every day. If you do, it's because of your choice. If you don't, it's because of your choice. But you don't have to have an IQ of any level to choose that. You don't have to have any history, forward or backwards, that would relate to your choice of being able to choose to pray. Second, it's up to you to choose whether or not you want to study and read the Scriptures. That choice is strictly yours. The question of morality could be a talk that could go on for days, endlessly. You've heard all the talks, the beehives and Maya maids and laurels and the scouts and teachers and deacons, and you've heard all the talks about pros and cons and chastity and all of that, and we just simply would say to you, knowing what it's like as a married man with 8 children and married to a beautiful and delightful girl, and seeing kids around us and interviews and these men who have served as bishops, we would say to you, the choice to be involved in illicit immorality is a matter of choice. You're not a big guy or a big gal or anything because you do it or because you can go out and make out or pet or do all the goodies. That's a matter of choice. You're not special because you do that. You are special because you choose not to until the gift of total love is given to you, hopefully by the hand of a prophet, sealed in the temple. Then the relationship of husband and wife is not a question of sex, it's a question of total encompassing love. But that choice is your choice. A personal journal, it's your choice. I wish we could have an hour or so just on journals. I'm telling you that if you will get a journal, if I've never written in a journal, don't make a difference. Start writing now. What are you going to say when you're 25 and 30 and 35 and 50 and 60 and 70 to your kids and grandkids that come along that you just didn't care enough to give them a part of your history and to leave something of you here? You see, it's kind of like the question was raised about Howard Hughes, and they were speculating. 3 billion? 4 billion? Man, a hurry I understood he owned TWA and RKO and Jane Russell and everybody. I mean, he owned them all. Howard Hughes. He was a wreck. He was nobody's idol, except those that didn't know what a good idol was. And someone said, how much do you think Howard Hughes left when he died? And a smart, wise old man says, well, I think he left it all. Your personal journal. If you will take a journal on a daily basis, you miss a night, next day, and chronicle your events tied into what we're going to talk about in just a moment, and that is, are you achieving and moving towards your goals? You will find days of discouragement. I have them. Everybody has days of discouragement. The whole world raises their hands. Huh. Prophets have discouragement. Apostles have discouragement. Leaders of all kind have discouragement. Just because you have discouragement, don't think you're special. You're just ordinary. But you know what happens when you have a little discouragement? You can go back and you can read the journal of the prophets. We call them scripture. Or you can go back and you can read your own journal and find that you're not doing too bad. And you go back to see where you promised yourself what you were going to do. And then you kind of look over the roadmap to see how you're doing and what you have to do to get back on the road. Excellence in school. Personal choice. Personal choice. We just discovered, we've been doing a study on why students get A's and why they get B's and why they don't do hardly anything at all. And the IQ doesn't have too much to do with it, particularly in the high school and regular college levels, in the specialized levels of exacting nuclear scientists on the graduate side. Makes a little difference. But in terms of moving right on through where you want to go, we have found in terms of study that you have a goal of spending, if it takes you an hour a day at night, for every hour a day you spend in class, to review and rewrite those notes, to write them up again and check off what you need to do. I'm saying to you that I could take a group of 100 students at random, and if they agreed to follow the rules of success for students in studying, they could turn C's into B's and A's, and if they tried it all, why, 3 sixes and 3 sevens would become a rule. It's a matter of choice. But Brother Bob, what you prescribed is work. We have to do something. The next item. Number 6, your exercise and your health is key. Your exercise and your health is key. What you eat and the way you exercise and your physical fitness, as your body goes, oftentimes so goes the mental attitude and spirit that you have. And number 7, choose your friends carefully. Look now at those you associate with and determine whether they are friends or associates or non-friends or enemies. All right. Item number 1, then, is the choice, fundamentally, is yours. Item number 2 is to understand, then, the rule of how choice manifests itself. I had a group of boys. A group of boys that were priest age in age, about 14 of them. We had some that were good students, some that were show-offs. We had some that were having problems with smoking, a little problem with beer drinking. 6-pack on a weekend was a big kick to them. And then they would live the lie and come to priesthood meeting and even want to prepare the sacrament because the bishop can't keep up on everybody all the time because we're in charge of ourselves. And some of them were smart alecks, and some of them weren't caring too much about school or grades or whatever because they had the right to choose. They finally got wheels at 16, and they could become free agents. And I thought to myself, of those 12 boys, I can only see 4 going on missions because they weren't that dedicated. I thought, what activity can we do that would really get their minds geared up to the issue of choice? And I hit upon it. Something that I had experienced but hadn't thought of it in the same way. It's called scuba and scuba diving. And so we got those boys enrolled in a scuba course. And they got very excited about it. And every Wednesday night we would meet and study biology and plants and fish and air embolism and the bends and apparatus. And we would swim together in physical fitness. And the thing I loved it, now watch this, the thing that I love so much about scuba is because if they obeyed the rules that they learned about, they would have the most marvelous experience in the world down 75 and 100 feet, booping around, coming up and saying hello to the great white sharks. Hello. Fish, kelp, flowers, coming over on your back. Can you picture it? Over on your back and looking up at the sunlight coming down through the water. It's weightlessness. Because you can breathe just like a fish in and out. That's if you obey the rules. But here's the neat part. If they didn't obey the rules, they would die. And so I had something to be able to take those magnificent guys with and say, I love you. And if you listen to me and the dive master, we will teach you how to have experiences that we can't even describe to you. But they trusted us. We told them how beautiful it would be, how incredible it would be. We told them about night dives. And one young boy was a little leery about the thought of diving in the ocean at pitch black night. And I says, just trust. But isn't that what the Lord has told us? Doesn't the Lord tell us that if we will choose to live the gospel of Jesus Christ, we will have experiences and feelings that are incredible? But if you choose to break the rules, the seven I just gave you, you break them regularly, you're going to die. The big one in scuba is that you have to breathe in and out all the time. If you breathe in and out and go down about 10 or 15 feet, even in a swimming pool, 8 feet, and you take a big breath of air down at 8 feet in somebody's swimming pool, as a few boys have done over the years, showing off the big dudes. They breathe in, and then they take the mouthpiece out, and they come to the surface, and their lungs explode. So when you're down 40 feet and you panic a little bit, you've got to continue to breathe in and out. You breathe in and out all the way to the surface. And if somehow your air and everything goes away, then you'll start letting your air out and come to the surface. But you can't hold your breath. When you get yourself into a bind or a problem, there's some of you right now that feel like that you're down at 100 feet and you're not too sure about your apparatus, whether it's working properly. You're scared. You're scared because of what you've seen. You're scared because you didn't obey and you went over by the kelp. And the kelp kind of works around you and it kind of comes around you. And pretty soon it's all around you. And you start fighting it and then you don't know where it's up or down. And a cloud goes over, so the top up here is no longer lighted. It's dark and you're not sure whether that's up or that's up. And you get scared. And we kept saying to the boys, keep breathing. Never stop breathing. And help will come. No matter what happens in your life, never, ever stop praying. If you stop praying, it's like being down at 100 feet and you quit breathing. Because as long as you're praying, help will come. Help will come from a friend or an institute teacher or a mother or dad or a scripture that will inspire you. The rule is that if you obey the rules, you will live. It's your choice. If you don't obey the rules, then you will die. It's as simple as that. The question of success is a matter of personal choice. 11:30 at night, on June the 7th last year, we were on the boat. And we decided to have a night dive. No moon. We were a mile from shore, and it was 500 feet down. And all of the boys decided they would go off. They trusted us. trust these good men. Trust your institute leaders and your bishops. Trust the prophets that you'll hear over the conference weekend. Don't do anything except hang on every word that they speak as though those words are just like a dive master talking to you about how to live or die underwater, and they're telling you how to live. And one by one, those boys went off with their little tiny lanterns, which didn't shine very far. But the dive masters, we put us a glowing stick. We'd break it and it would kind of glow. You've seen them for campers. And we stuck it up behind our air unit on the back. And so as we went in, the boys would see it and they would follow the light. We took them through kelp. We took them through fish. There were times where we asked them to turn their lights off. And they paused and listened. And some told us they prayed. And they began to see the fish illuminate. And a beauty under the water at 75 feet down at night, that's incredible. And then we gave a signal to turn their lights back on, and they did. And they followed the glowing sticks right back over to the ship. And when they surfaced, they weren't 10 feet from the side of the ship. And what a relief. I'll tell you his name. His name was Rick Meadows. And young Rick said to me, as I said to him, Rick, the experience you just had is the experience of when a young man decides to choose to follow the light of his master, even Jesus Christ, and the light of the gospel. You did it with faith and confidence, and you have been brought home safely to this ship. And then I bore my testimony to him, as I will to you, that if you will choose and know that it's your choice to choose, that if you will follow the teachings and the words of the prophets as found in the scriptures and the living prophets today and those taught by these good brethren, and you will surround that pursuit with constant, ever constant prayer, you will be brought back one day a totally successful, achieving son and daughter of God, not to the boat, but to the home of your Heavenly Father, where He hungers and desires that you come, that you might live with Him and us, if we are worthy, forever. Success is a personal thing. It's a matter of choice. And the choice is up to you. I pray that you make that choice. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
And you're listening to Sunday Fireside. You've just heard a talk from Brother Robert Pedersen. His talk was entitled, Success is a Personal Thing. This talk was given at the Ephraim LDS Institute of Religion on Friday, March 26, 1982. Brother Pedersen has spent most of his professional life successfully building sales and financial organizations. And now for our second talk on Sunday Fireside, an LDS General Conference address from Elder Earl C. Tingey of the Quorum of 70 of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This talk is on keeping the Sabbath day holy and was given in General Conference April 6, 1996. And now, Elder Earl C. Tingey on Sunday Fireside.
Good morning, brothers and sisters. My subject is the Sabbath day, specifically as it relates to shopping on Sunday. From the beginning, God has instructed prophets to teach the covenant people to honor the Sabbath day. God rested from His creative labors on the seventh day. This day was blessed and sanctified as a holy day. The fourth commandment to Moses was to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Elder Bruce R. McConkie taught that Sabbath observance was a sign between ancient Israel and their God, whereby the chosen people might be known. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints recognize Sunday as the Sabbath, in commemoration of the fact that Christ came forth from the grave on Sunday, and the apostles commenced meeting thereafter on the first day of the week. On Sunday, August 7, 1831, the Lord revealed the following to the prophet Joseph Smith. And that thou mayest more fully keep thyself unspotted from the world, thou shalt go to the house of prayer and offer up thy sacraments upon my holy day. For verily this is a day appointed unto you to rest from your labors and to pay thy devotions unto the Most High. Nevertheless, thy vows shall be offered up in righteousness on all days and at all times. But remember that on this, the Lord's day, thou shalt offer thine oblations and thy sacraments unto the Most High, confessing thy sins unto thy brethren and before the Lord. And on this day thou shalt do none other thing, only let thy food be prepared with singleness of heart, that thy fasting may be perfect, or in other words, that thy joy may be full. In a recent regional training meeting for priesthood leaders, President Gordon B. Hinckley expressed concern that the members of the church may have a tendency to take on the ways of the world. He said, "We don't adopt them immediately, but we slowly take them on, unfortunately. I wished I had the power to convert this whole church to the observance of the Sabbath. I know our people would be more richly blessed of the Lord if they would walk in faithfulness in observance of the Sabbath." End quote. A very important aspect of properly observing the Sabbath concerns shopping on Sunday. Unfortunately, many commercial businesses and establishments are open on Sunday. The world sees no conflict in Sunday shopping. But we of the church have been counseled and taught by prophets to keep ourselves unspotted from the world. We should not shop on Sunday. President Hinckley continued with the following instruction to priesthood leaders. Quote, "There isn't anybody in this church who has to buy furniture on Sunday. There really isn't. There isn't anybody in this church who has to buy a new automobile on Sunday. Is there? No. There isn't anybody in this church who, with a little care and planning, has to buy groceries on Sunday. No. You don't need ice cream to be bought on Sunday. You don't need to make Sunday a day of merchandising. I don't think we need to patronize the ordinary business merchants on the Sabbath day. Why do they stay open? To get customers. Who are those customers? Well, they are not all non-members of the church. You know that, and I know that." End quote. In the book of Nehemiah in the Old Testament, the people were taught to observe the Sabbath with the following instruction. "And if the people of the land bring ware or any victuals on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath or on the holy day." Elder Dallin H. Oaks of the Council of the Twelve has taught, quote, "Modern-day prophets have encouraged us not to shop on Sunday. Those of us who shop on the Sabbath cannot escape responsibility for encouraging business to remain open on that day. Essential services must be provided, but most Sabbath transactions could be avoided if merchants and customers were determined to avoid doing business on the Lord's day." Brothers and sisters, let's not shop on Sunday. One way we avoid this is by planning ahead. Fill up the gas tank on Saturday. Acquire the needed groceries for the weekend on Saturday. Don't you be the means of causing someone to work on Sunday because you patronize their establishment. Of course, we know there are essential businesses that must be open on Sunday. These are emergency, medical, transportation, and some forms of protective services, such as police and fire. And we are grateful for those persons who staff these essential public establishments and afford us protection and comfort. In many countries of the world and in many states of the Union, shopping on Sunday is not done or is prohibited by law. We as a community of saints should use our influence in a positive way to encourage other citizens to not shop on Sunday. We should start with ourselves. If we will not shop on Sunday, businesses which open on Sunday will have no financial reason to remain open on Sunday. It's really that simple. I often drive through small rural communities of Utah on a Sunday afternoon as I return home from state conference assignments. I observe that almost always the tractors are idle and the fields are empty. I thank God for the faith of the humble farmers. When I enter the cities, I see the parking lots of many stores filled with cars on a Sunday. And I'm saddened that the Lord's law is being broken. The justification and reason often cited by the owners and operators of such businesses is to be competitive, to conform to corporate policy, and so on. I will remember an interview President Spencer W. Kimball once had with a faithful church member. It went like this, quote, "What is your occupation?" And the man said, "I operate a service station." And I asked, "Do you operate on the Sabbath?" His answer, "No, I do not." "Well, how can you get along? Most service station operators seem to think they must open on the Sabbath." "I get along well," he said. "The Lord is good to me." "Do you not have stiff competition?" I asked. "Yes, indeed," he replied. "Across the street is a man who keeps open all day Sunday." "And you never open?" I asked. "No, sir," he said. "And I am grateful, and the Lord is kind, and I have sufficient for my needs." End quote. Members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are a covenant people. We know we live in the world, but we are taught to not be of the world. Like ancient Israel, who also was a covenant people, we should encourage the proper observance of the Sabbath day by not shopping on Sunday. Let this become a sign with our God by which we shall be known. This is our heritage. In this dispensation from the days of our pioneer forefathers, we have been so taught. I recall a talk given by President Hinckley several years ago wherein he said, and I quote, "May I take you back 142 years when there was, of course, no tabernacle here, no temple or temple square. On July 24, 1847, the pioneer company of our people came into this valley. An advance group had arrived a day or two earlier. Brigham Young arrived on Saturday. The next day, Sunday, services were held in the morning and in the afternoon. There was no hall of any kind in which to meet. I suppose that in the blistering heat of that July Sunday, they sat on the tongues of their wagons and leaned against the wheels while the brethren spoke. The season was late, and they were faced with a gargantuan and immediate task if they were to grow seed for the next season. But President Young pleaded with them not to violate the Sabbath, then or in the future." End quote. Can we possibly imagine how tempting it must have been for our pioneer forefathers to break the Sabbath day? Their survival depended upon the food they could grow and harvest. Yet their leaders counseled them to exercise faith in the promises of the Lord and to respect the Sabbath day. What are the promises and blessings of the Lord to those who honor the Sabbath day by not shopping on Sunday? The 59th section of the Doctrine and Covenants and the 26th chapter of Leviticus in the Old Testament give similar promises. The fullness of the earth is yours. The land will be blessed with rain and yield its increase. There will be peace in the land, and God will magnify his faithful people, have respect for them, and establish his covenant with them. As another blessing and a warning, I think of the counsel of President George Albert Smith when he said, quote, "Much of the sorrow and distress that is afflicting mankind is traceable to the fact that they have ignored his, God's, admonition to keep the Sabbath day holy," end quote. In conclusion, and appropriate to this beautiful Easter season, our observance of the Sabbath is an indication of the depth of our conversion and our willingness to keep sacred covenants. Elder Markey Peterson has said, Our observance or non-observance of the Sabbath day is an unerring measure of our attitude towards the Lord personally and toward his suffering in Gethsemane, his death on the cross, and his resurrection from the dead. It is a sign of whether we are Christians in very deed or whether our conversion is so shallow that commemoration of his atoning sacrifice means little or nothing to us, end quote. I bear humble witness of the sanctity of the Sabbath day and of our need to resolve not to shop on Sunday. It is an element of our faith and obedience to eternal principles. It is a sign between our God and his chosen people. It is a true law and commandment of God. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
And you're listening to Sunday Fireside. You've just heard a talk from Elder Earl C. Tingey of the Quorum of 70 of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. This talk was on keeping the Sabbath day holy and was given in LDS General Conference, April 6, 1996. And now, music from the Mormon Tabernacle Choir on Sunday Fireside.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Sunday Fireside, featuring inspirational talks and discussions on religious topics from popular LDS speakers and general authorities of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Please join us again next week at this same time for Sunday Fireside.